Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I sort of feel like we should start with a rousing chorus of "The Boys Are Back in Town" or something.
It's very good to be back.
This is a Manhattan-bound B Express train. The next stop is Grand Street.
Mind the gap.
Hello, I'm John Elledge, and this is Skyline's The City Metric podcast. It feels a bit weird to be doing a post-mortem of last week's local elections this many days after. Something. I mean, is it worth it? Was anything interesting enough to even discuss? Was there anything that makes it worth doing this? But I don't know. To find out, I've invited the once and future politics correspondent at the New Statesman, Patrick McGuire, back to say hi. Hello, Patrick.
Hello. It's very good to be back after my year in the wilderness.
Yeah. Where the hell have you been?
Chained to a desk in Parliament. But now I'm.
You can say the Times. You're allowed to say you've been working at the Times.
I didn't want to turn off your write-on listener base, John.
Other publications are available. But you came back. You're working here again. That's nice.
I'm very happy to be back. I mean, just to revisit your point about why is this worth doing, I mean, I personally have only just woken up from a coma after Southport elected two Labour councillors for the first time in its history. That is, earth-shattering stuff, and I look forward to devoting the entire podcast to that.
To my shame, I actually missed that one, despite having yesterday edited a piece on the election results across the Liverpool City region.
Really?
By our Liverpool City region correspondent, Dave Mayle.
A great man.
Who did start out life as a kind of crazy man who sends emails about underbounding in Liverpool, who I accidentally turned into a monthly columnist without quite meaning to. But yeah, so despite having literally edited a piece on this, I somehow hadn't noticed that Labour did creep forward in Southport.
They did, and it's very interesting. It reflects their progress they made at the general election last year. I mean, for listeners who aren't familiar with Southport, one, what the hell are you doing? And two, it's has for time immemorial been a Tory Lib Dem marginal. Lib Dems held it for 20 years, and then the Blessed John Pugh stood down. Labour came in second, and now the Lib Dems are stripped of their, Labour can't win here trump card. Labour are making huge advances. I mean, two councillors is huge by Southport standards, and this is sort of emblematic of the problems faced by the Lib Dems across the country, I think.
Yeah, something else I do remember from Dave's piece, that's something I'd not really appreciated, was like quite how powerful the Lib Dems were in Liverpool City Council.
Yeah, they controlled it for 12 years.
In the last decade, during the sort of new Labour hegemony, Liverpool, which is the most Labour city on earth, was run by the Lib Dems.
Which is, it's crazy to think about now. And now they are sort of, they did quite well. They won a couple of seats in South Liverpool, in Childwall, which has a big Jewish population, but that was their sort of heartland before their collapse sort of around the coalition. But, they've made a few gains, they're very happy about it, but as is the case in Manchester, they're nowhere near sort of reverting to the pre-coalition norm. And that's why I think, there's two fronts on which the whole Lib Dems have had a great night thing has to be tempered. The first is in seats like Southport, Solihull, that they held for decades, they've fallen back into third place. That's not strictly true with the local election results in Southport, but Labour winning is emblematic of that. And the second is that, in the great cities, which were used to be their sort of second heartland, if you can even call it that, they are sort of still languishing behind. Even if they're making very small advances, they're not that significant.
There is a danger that we just spend the whole podcast talking about the Lib Dems. And, actually, I think there probably is. The Lib Dems, I do suspect, are overly represented in the audience for Skylines, I must say. But before we move on, I do want to say one thing. They were losing Liverpool by 2010. It predates the coalition. What's going on there? Why is it that, like, just as Labour were losing ground basically everywhere else, they were sort of consolidating their position in Liverpool?
Oh, Labour?
Yeah.
I think it has a lot to do with, and, you know, I'm sure Dave Mayle knows a lot more about this than I do, but, and I was very young at the time this happened, but my understanding is it has, you know, it's a mixture of Labour rebuilding after their sort of nadir they reached in sort of the late 90s in Liverpool, and also the Lib Dem Council administration wasn't the most functional. So, yeah.
Was it just literally one of those things where it's not about national politics for once, it is genuinely about local issues that the Lib Dems had just done they've been in office a long time.
I would say you are probably right, although, you know, I'm sure correspondents will correct me if I'm not, but as I understand it and as I remember, and I wouldn't say 12-year-old me was an authority on... No, 15-year-old me.
You're not that bloody young. I know 15, you're infuriatingly young, but you're not that quite.
15-year-old me didn't know a lot that much about politics. No, nowhere near as much as I thought. But, yeah, I think you're right. As it's sort of a sort of Sunderland-y kind of situation, although not Sunderland obviously isn't as pronounced, where the Lib Dems made gains at the expense of a Labour administration that has been there for a very long time.
But, like, logically, I mean, I want to talk about other cities in a moment, but logically speaking, this has to be a part of the path back for the Lib Dems, right? Because, like, Labour do very much dominate the great cities now. One-party states are not only not very healthy, they also don't tend to stay one-party states. The Tories are never going to win a lot of these places. The Lib Dems are a much better cultural fit. It might take a while, but that's got to be where they start creeping back, hasn't it?
Yeah, that's true. And also, you see the sort of localised pockets of sort of Lib Dem gains, the sort of post-Brexit realignment, if such a thing exists, has encouraged us to think, wow, that's crazy. You know, Lib Dems winning in Sunderland. What the hell is going on? Well, actually, what we're seeing is them shifting back to being that sort of natural repository for protest. You know, they're just a benign bin in which you can chuck all your grievances and there will be a competent sort of opposition force on local councils. I think that's the case in Liverpool, although Liverpool Labour activists would beg to differ that they are anything but that the local Lib Dems are benign. And also, you know, the councils they, you know, kept control of are sort of, you could say that's their, the consolidation of their, you know, old heartland, you know, places like Three Rivers, Eastleigh, you know, the councils in South West London, they all have that sort of slightly suburban, you know, well-heeled flavour that sort of, that is what we can, what the Lib Dems are, is a sort of opposition party most of the country that will sort of give them a foothold to, you know, start clawing back. And they can only govern or command majorities in a certain sort of place.
Let's move on from the Lib Dems. I want to hold off talking about London as long as we can. What other things do you think were interesting about this round of elections, and particularly in the other cities?
Birmingham. Well, I mean, not Birmingham City, but the West Midlands. Very interesting. A good sort of illustration of what happens to the UKIP vote, what is happening to, you know, Labour, sort of Labour heartlands, you know, Dudley, Walsall. Tories made significant advances there.
Of the major conurbations, the West Midlands is certainly the sort of...
the bluest.
Most, yeah. And I've been trying to sort of work out what that might be. I think maybe it's... I wonder if it's almost about the form of the place. It is very suburban. It's very car-based. Actually, the sort of bit of the region that kind of feels like city rather than suburbs is quite small.
Yeah, exactly. And also, that, I mean, that's why Andy, probably why Andy Street will, you know, I mean, we're very early in the cycle, but I'd say he stands a good chance of holding that mayoralty based on the results we've just seen. And also, you know, you look at places like, does Nuneaton's in Warwickshire, right? It falls in.
Nuneaton is Warwickshire. It's it might be a non-constituent part. It's not one of the bits that gets to vote for him.
Oh, sure.
It's kind of in the commuter belt. The bits that actually vote for the mayor of the West Midlands is still just the old metropolitan county, which is the three cities of Birmingham, Wolverhampton, Coventry, plus the three boroughs of the Black Country and Solihull. So that's just me nerding out about. I can do this with most of the city regions now. It's really. I'm great at parties, is what I'm saying here. Anyway, let's move on from that. But yes, no, I would tend to agree that, like, Andy Street is probably going to win re-election. He's got an incumbency advantage. He seems reasonably popular up there. The whole region is trending quite blue. And also, as I understand it, like, my secret sources in the West Midlands Labour Party are already panicking that Sean Simon's people think he should get another go, and it's kind of they think that's a terrible idea, but it's not clear who they have instead.
Well, exactly, especially not someone who can match the sort of non-partisan, semi-technocratic appeal of Andy Street, right? You can either have, as was the case, you know, you have the John Lewis guy who's been doing a really good job and isn't really the sort of, you know, isn't one of their bad Tories, or you have a generic Labour Birmingham MP who people won't necessarily be particularly inspired by, as was probably the case with Sean Simon.
You know who I quite genuinely think they should be thinking about running?
Is it one of the brothers from UB40?
No, although, I don't know, maybe that is a good... Well, Noddy Holder, that would be good. But no, I was actually going to say, I think Jess Phillips might be worth a go.
Yes, and like I said, you know, it would suit her. I'm sure, it, you know, they'd be glad to get her out of the PLP.
It seems to be a good fit with kind of her... Oh, if you've just heard that, that's a mailbag falling over in the corner of the podcasting basement / mailroom.
The bag of letters in which Stephen says the DLR is a tube.
Shut up. But yeah, no, I think Jess Phillips, her kind of like full-throat personality would be a good fit with a mayoralty where so much of it is about banging the drum and sort of talking stuff up. And I also think like she's not kind of a sort of traditional West Midlands machine politician. She's kind of, you know, she's a girl from Yardley, isn't she?
So well, exactly. And also she has sort of conspicuously distanced herself from the leadership on the issues that, you know, somewhat, you know, people like her would say are an issue on the doorstep and that might get the sort of voters who voted Tory in the West Midlands councils this time, you know, back on board with her. The sort of, you know, I don't usually vote Labour, but, you know, she's all right, the sort of red Andy Street sort of effect.
Yeah, yeah. But well, if anyone from the West Midlands Labour Party is listening, then you can have that one for free.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Okay, so we had a Metro mayoral election in Sheffield. Bit of a shocker, but Dan Jarvis won that one for the Labour Party.
I mean, on Sheffield, and I know you don't want to talk about Lib Dems anymore, but just briefly, that was arguably the only great city in which they made advances that we might see have a national effect in them winning all the seats in Sheffield Hallam.
Oh, I hadn't actually realised that one. That's interesting.
All the wards in Sheffield Hallam, they won.
Nick Clegg's old seats, which is now held by Jared O'Mara, who hasn't been to Parliament recently, as I understand
it. He's back now.
Oh, he's back.
He had a lengthy absence and obviously he's suspended from the whip for making offensive comments.
But he is one of those people you can just see, like, yeah, this wasn't a very long selection process, was it? Or this was done in a bit of a hurry.
Yeah, and I think there was a lot of discontent locally about the sort of, you know, the investigation dragging on. And that has manifested itself at the ballot box this time around. Mm. And also, obviously, in Sheffield, you have the whole thing with the trees. That was one of the places the Greens made. One of the pockets in which the Greens advanced that night.
We got we talked about the trees in Sheffield in this podcast briefly the other day, and then we did an episode on street furniture, and India Bork came down to talk about trees, and she kind of told me some of the stuff that was going on in Sheffield. And I swear to God, I have never had such an angry email about this podcast. Normally, when people get in contact about the podcast, they're lovely in a way that people who just read something you've written are not necessarily. Because if they've heard your voice, they kind of think you as a human being.
They hear your frailties.
Yeah, yeah. So normally, I love all my podcast listeners, but this was such an angry email, and I'm not entirely sure what it was he was angry about. So maybe we'll get back in touch.
I mean, have you seen what they're doing to the trees? There's a lot to be angry about.
They're just ripping out a lot of trees, right?
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, which is not a great look.
Well, so this guy was pro felling trees?
No, I think he was anti, but it wasn't entirely clear. It was just one of those where you kind of thought
incoherent, righteous anger.
Yeah, it's like, I'm sure you're genuinely angry about a genuine mistake we made or something, but I think you probably should have thought for a little bit before hitting send on this email, just to kind of clarify your argument a little bit, because I'm genuinely not sure. If you're still listening, if you haven't unsubscribed and discussed, do get back in touch, because we do like to correct our mistakes. So I'd love to know what the problem was. But yeah, the Metro mayoralty was really very dull, wasn't it? Like, before he didn't win on the first round, which that did surprise me a little bit. Like, I think if I recall correctly, Andy Burnham certainly won in Manchester.
Oh yeah, he won at Canter in basically almost every ward. Andy Burnham won.
Steve Rotherham won the Liverpool City region in the first round.
Yeah.
Dan Jarvis for Labour in Sheffield did not win on the first round. He got like 48% or something, and so the nature of the electoral system means they had to count the second preferences. So it was not that good a victory, considering how strongly Labour City and Sheffield is.
Yeah, exactly, and it raises interesting questions about his desire to, in the long run, lobby for the one Yorkshire deal, right? Because Yorkshire is huge and is, you know, not necessarily a Labour county. Obviously, you have the great cities in the, you know, the West Midlands, as West Midlands, West Yorkshire, South Yorkshire, Hull, very Labour-y, but sort of, you know, you only need to see it's like Pudsey, Halton Price and Howden. You know, I could literally name dozens of them, but if you can't win the first round in what's notionally in the Socialist Republic of South Yorkshire, is it really wise to, you know, press on beyond there? Even within South Yorkshire, I mean, Barnsley, as it happens, is the, you know, his own seat is the council that's obstructing the South Yorkshire metro mayoralty. But sort of, yeah, beyond that, what happens if there is a one Yorkshire deal and, you know, Labour mess it up?
My instinct is that if there was a sort of one Yorkshire deal, it would be a sort of genuine marginal, because while Labour do dominate the urban bits of what used to be the West Riding, other than like that and Hull and York, they don't dominate the rest of it. That's more than half the population. So I think it probably could genuinely go either way. And if Dan Jarvis is kind of like riding on a white horse as the guy who conjured this deal into being, who is already the mayor of part of Yorkshire, he will be a name to a certain extent. I can kind of... He would certainly be the front runner. But it's... I mean, there's a lot to do before that post even exists.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not clear that anyone's going to...
Have retired colonel appeal, Dan Jarvis, I'm sure, as a result of his biography.
I always feel with Jarvis like he doesn't quite live up to his own biography. His biography is kind of like amazing. It's like exactly what you would want from sort of, you know, a potential future leader of the Labour Party, as he was in the past, tipped to be. He's like, you know, an ex-military guy, came back to serve as Labour MP near the community he grew up in. He lost his wife very sadly and was raising kids on his own for a while. It's a really sort of good political story to tell. But personally, he's never been that impressive on a lot of stuff.
It's interesting. I think it speaks to a sort of deeper malaise, you know, with Miliband period Labour, which was that sort of it got so desperate within the PLP, you know, their search for a white knight or a saviour. It was almost became a case of, right, what would make a good three paragraphs in a story about plotting to replace Miliband?
Yeah.
You know, and it was always, well, Alan Johnson, former postie, you know, straight-talking geezer, is very, you know, makes it a very attractive three paragraphs. Like you say, Dan Jarvis' backstory makes a very attractive three paragraphs. And it's a shame, because Dan Jarvis only came into Parliament in 2012, and he was built up so quickly that, you know, there's a case to make that he didn't have the chance to build up his reputation nationally. He was almost presented as a fully formed, savoured Labour Party. And, of course, if you've only been in Parliament for 3 years, you're not going to, you know... Well, you know, people said the same about Keir Starmer, right? But, you know, if you've been in Parliament for 3 years, you know, you are not automatically going to be leadership material, even if you're the most talented and compelling politician in the PLP, right?
You know who did become party leader just, I think, 4 years after first being elected as an MP? Was David Cameron, and look how that turned out. That was a complete disaster, so...
There you go. Substance over style.
Yeah. This is clearly the risk to avoid. Okay. I fear we're getting closer to the point where we have to talk about London, but like, well, is there anything else out there in the wider country that you think is worth talking about?
Plymouth. Plymouth's quite interesting.
Oh, Plymouth. What happened? Labour didn't take Plymouth,
Labour,
did they?
Labour took Plymouth, didn't they?
Oh, they did. Oh, yeah, no, I got confused. I thought, because, like, there was meant to be a victory speech in Plymouth, wasn't there? Oh, hang on, maybe the victory speech was meant to be in
Barnet.
Yeah. Okay, never mind. Ignore me. Tell me about Plymouth.
Labour won it. They ran, obviously, they won Plymouth,
Devonport?
Devonport, yeah. I'm trying to think of what Johnny Mercer's seat is. When they ran Johnny Mercer very close and won Plymouth-Devonport in the general election, so they're building on ground there. Obviously, it was the one place Momentum didn't do their run seat thing in as planned.
Plymouth is kind of in the same box as like an Exeter or a Canterbury, yes. I think, where it's like one of those places that could plausibly be sort of a red a red island and a blue sea, because it's quite, although it's a small city, it is still a city rather than a town.
It's a city, obviously it has a sort of defence manufacturing base. Defence cuts are a big issue there. That's what Johnny Mercer blamed in the aftermath. He said, you know, this is a savage indictment, well, paraphrasing, but he said, you know, it's a savage indictment of our stance on defence cuts, which is weird. You wouldn't expect sort of this Labour Party to benefit, be the beneficiaries of a, you know, a ding-dong over defence. You know, the conventional wisdom was, you know, you fight Corbyn's Labour and a Tory party on issues of national security and defence, Tories will romp home. But you see, when defence is tied to questions of mass employment in communities like Plymouth, then actually it could go the other way.
Yeah, and the party's kind of done that with some of the sort of law and order issues as well, which is like surprisingly...
Bobby's
like,
on the beat, yeah.
Which again, is not something you would expect Jeremy Corbyn to take that position on, but it does seem to...
But it is, you know, it is just an extension of the economic programme, right? More money for the public sector, and, you know, if the corollary of that is more money for police or, you know, defence spending, all the better.
Okay, inevitably, London. How well do you think it went?
I don't think it was a disaster, or I don't necessarily think it was a failure. I mean, Labour made relatively huge advances in, you know, Wandsworth, Westminster. They, you know, maybe not huge in terms of, you know, taking control or winning loads of seats. But if we look at this long term, we are, what, 1 year into a 5-year electoral cycle? The demographic shifts, etc., that have opened these questions for the first time in, you know, ever, are only going to become more pronounced over the next 4 years. So if you're looking at Labour's long game, you know, you're looking at them taking, if you want to, you know, be measured in proportion about this, they had, I think, largely a good night. Obviously, Barnet, incredibly disappointing. That was an open goal. But I think there's a lot to take heart from.
So I think I have 2 points about this. One is, there was no expectation management. Like, Momentum were going around saying how, you know, we can win Westminster, we can win Wandsworth. Wandsworth has not been Labour since 1978. Westminster has literally always had a Tory majority. These were always very, very big asks, even with the Tories' difficulties in London and other urban areas. And obviously, like, Momentum as a campaign group, part of their role is to get people excited. So it's not surprising they were going around doing that. It is a bit weird that no one from the party proper was saying, you know, trying to dampen this down and set expectations a bit lower. The other thing I would say is I do think it wasn't just Barnet where the result was a bit disappointing. Like, Barnet was obviously the big prize they should have won and didn't. It's London's biggest borough by population. It's another one that's never been Labour, but has certainly been trending that way due to demographic change. And the Labour was only two seats short. It really should have been winnable, and they messed it up due to the anti-Semitism row. Barnet's a very Jewish area. But I also think there's a certain amount of suburban discomfort going on, because it feels to me like Labour should also have done better in Hillingdon.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, if I were a Tory MP for a seat in House of London, if I were Boris Johnson, if I were Theresa Villiers, who was looking very chipper, appropriately given that she'd then be for chipping Barnet. But anyway, chipper the morning after the election, if I were Ian Duncan Smith, I'd feel great, because, like you say, we've had a year of Labour talking up the prospect of them winning these seats, and, you know, if that is a suburban backlash to... you know, the prospect. I wouldn't be surprised.
I think it depends on which suburbs you're looking at. I mean, I think, like, there are some outer London boroughs that feel quite London.
Mm.
Like much of Croydon feels very Londonish, but Bromley just across the border, really not so much.
It's very Kenty.
Bexley is very Kentish. Havering is very Essex. Hillingdon is, well, it's Middlesex, which has all got swallowed by London. But still, what those boroughs I just listed have in common is that they all voted Leave, as did Sutton, which confusingly keeps electing Lib Dems, so clearly no idea what that's about. But yeah, I think the kind of those Leave voting outer boroughs are always going to be a much harder ask for Labour.
And this is where, you know, you tie this back into the big picture. You know, Labour's new electoral map is that the calculation is that if you win enough seats in London and the great cities and university towns, you don't necessarily have to win all of the old conventional Mondeo Man Labour Tory marginals. But if they, as you say, if they can't consolidate their control across London, then, you know, maybe the sort of myopia of that approach might be revealed to a bit myopic. But, you know, as I said, you know, we're a year into an electoral cycle. Let's see how many people move to Barnet and Hillingdon from the inner boroughs in that time.
I kind of think that, like, the message is one of we're all stuffed.
Yeah.
Because, if I mean, like, okay, the projected national vote share was literally like a tie, which, I mean, arguably that's worse for Labour because you would expect an opposition to do better in midterms. But nonetheless, that does kind of point to a bit of a stalemate. But also, like, it's really not clear that there's enough winnable seats for either of the big two parties to get to a majority right now, which is, I mean, it will be make it quite interesting as a period to write about politics. But in terms of, like, you know, actually having decent government,
good stable government, and that's the Lib Dem thing comes back into it, right? Because
had
the
Lib Dems,
not been emaciated by coalition, and were their recovery not so sluggish, although I struggle to see how it could be anything but as sluggish as it is. I mean, maybe if their campaign in the election hadn't been quite as flat-footed, then they might have won a few more seats. But without a healthy Lib Dem block in the Commons, and on the basis of the locals, there isn't really going to be one big enough to hold the balance of power. And with the SNP taking their place and their defining issue being a constitutional one, it's very difficult to see how, you know, you could say, you know, hung parliaments forever, great, we'll have a government driven by compromise and the Lib Dems will be the kingmakers and it'll all be moderate and brilliant. I'm sure a lot of your listeners would think. But, you know, given that they've been replaced by the SNP, you know, there is really no, it's not like they've been replaced by another, you know,
it's a party with a very specific agenda that involves breaking up the United Kingdom.
Exactly. Yeah. Which you know, if
again, not stable government.
And also, if Brexit wasn't happening, you could just about see how maybe we staggered on with minority governments and coalitions. But, you know, with the SNP and the Brexit dimension, you know, it's just a constitutional car crash, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I imagine we'll be coming back to that in future episodes. My last question is, you know, you promised me that interview with Joe Anderson in May 2017. How's that coming along?
See you next week.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.